If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So after a brief hiatus of the conventions, first in Cleveland, then in Philadelphia, Jeff, I forgot your name, Jeff Carlin.
It's been so long.
Right? Jeff Carlin comes back so he could produce the Chicago way. And with us again, Jeff Carlin, me, John Cass, and our special guest, Kristen McQuarrie.
Hello.
Hello.
You're looking very dapper today.
Yeah, I did.
I love the suspenders.
That's not for style. That's just to hold my pants up.
When you become rather Orwellian,
not Orwellian, what's his name? We shall sell no more wine before it's time. Director of Citizen Kane?
Right.
Orson Wellesian.
Wellesian, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
When you gain a certain heft, suspenders are no longer fashion statements, but practical.
But necessary clothing requirements. You don't want a wardrobe malfunction.
Definitely not. I want to begin by thanking everybody who called in and whined and said, where's the podcast, and did they fire us and all that? No, we just didn't do it because Jeff was gone and we were busy.
Yes.
At the conventions, I have to admit that I screwed up the whole convention thing. You know why? The first day, I had gone on vacation the week before. So the first day I'm driving into Cleveland, those cops get killed, right? Mm-hmm. And they're setting up the Hillary, you know, who's going to talk at her convention and all this other stuff. There were, three police officers or four? Three killed and four and seven shot in Baton Rouge, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm writing a column with the sand of Union Pier in my topsiders.
That's tough.
Not tougher than being a police officer being shot, but I meant as a practical matter, you're writing a column. I should, and then all that week in Philadelphia, I should have taken the vacation after the conventions,
right?
Did you enjoy yourself?
I did. I like to go just because it's historic, and when you have a chance to do that and your company's willing to send you, mm-hmm. you should go. And so I did, and I had laid out like a series of columns I wanted to write. Some of them turned out, some of them didn't. But as you know, it was very well run. It was like a fortress there. There were, 17 law enforcement officials to every one person. I didn't see a lot of protests. And I thought the speeches in a way were better in some respects than the Democratic convention because there were more regular people who spoke mm-hmm, at the Republican mm-hmm. convention. And at the Democratic convention, I think 30 out of the 60 were elected officials.
But they're all smoother. They know how to talk
politics,
right?
That's true. That's true. Yes.
They know how to go to the edge of something and infer, whereas regular people just speak directly about what they...
That's true. That's true. What do you guys make of the continuing saga over Khan, the Khan family?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I gave this week, or let's see, the last few days, I've praised Hillary Clinton.
And
I've given Donald Trump the moods of July.
Right.
Because he won't shut up.
Because he will not shut up.
Seriously.
Come on.
I was actually sitting on the floor playing Scrabble with my kids, watching, waiting for Hillary. I had no idea what the lineup was that night. And so when he came out and spoke, I was pretty blown away. I thought, they have all their bases covered here in attacking him. And then for him he's got to respond. He's got to respond. And his response was so off.
Isn't there a great pivot there, Jeff Carlin, that he could have done?
Absolutely.
That have been?
He could have
attacks him, brings out the pocket constitution, which I have in my pocket, actually,
that's my, right that's now.
And as always. And then Khan You know, the Democrats don't announce that Khan is a immigration lawyer who helps wealthy Saudis get immigration status and therefore may be personally or professionally offended by Trump's anti-immigration positions. So Khan gets up and speaks, attacks him, and then how should Trump have responded?
He should have come out and done the classy thing, which would have been, thank you for your family's sacrifice. Thank you for being an American. Thank you for coming to this great nation and trying to make a better life the legal way, because that's his thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I strongly disagree with your critique of my understanding of how America works. I've done my business here for 50 years. I appreciate it, but you're wrong.
You cannot argue with someone. In this culture now, everything's about shaming and doing that sort of David Axelrod face. I can't do it on the radio, but it's sort of like your mouth open and you touch both of your cheeks and you feign like shock and like that's what journalism is now. And you cannot argue with someone who's a Gold Star parent. What I would have said, thank you, Mr. Khan, for your sacrifice and your son's sacrifice. And no one can really understand that. And Captain Khan is the kind of person we want in America. And what my policies are different because I want to make sure there are more of guys like your son here than any problems we may have like San Bernardino.
Right.
It was so easy. But you know what? I'm not making excuses for him. I gave him the mutza because by talking, what did he do? He lets Hillary off the hook, who is a pathological liar. I know the newsroom won't like this. Too bad, guys. That's what she is. And she lied to Chris Wallace again after her post-convention interview where she said, what did she say? You can find that later. Jim Comey said I told the truth. Or I did not lie to Jim Comey.
I was truthful.
The impression was she did, on her email server scandal, she did not lie, which is a lie.
I mean, but why does she step on herself in that way?
She's
got this in the bag.
I don't know.
Stop lying.
Her business is she's a liar. 66% of the American people think she's untruthful, or 65%. That's dangerous. That's dangerous long-term for the Republic to have the chief executive thought to be a liar and above the law. It's really hard to govern down the road. But in the short term, as long as Trump keeps opening his mouth, the media, which is, I guess, the palace guard now for the establishment, always has been, really.
Praetorian guard.
They will attack Trump, right? I see it. I'm in this environment. This is what we do. I get that sense of it. You read someone's copy and you see their tweets, which might be a little bit different, but you understand what the sentiments are.
Oh, sure. I mean,
they hate Trump.
They do. And I saw something even, was it overnight, Ivanka, his daughter, was talking about how she would never have been allowed herself to be sexually harassed at work.
His son saying about Ivanka. Eric was asked about it and said, she would never allow herself to work in a place where she would be affected like that.
Right, which is, you know what, that's not an offensive thing to say. You can twist it, you can go after her, you can attack her, you can say she's blaming the victim, you can do all of that, but I don't see the same level of criticism directed at Hillary Clinton. I mean, how much has the mainstream media really turned over rocks on the whole Clinton Foundation issue and whether or not there were serious conflicts of interest going on between fundraising and what was going on at the State Department? Nobody's even talking about that. But
point of personal privilege. You said that, but we are in the Tribune Tower right now talking about that. You write a column and are on the editorial board of the Tribune. I write a column. Jeff produces Rokan Show and all that network stuff that you guys were doing from the conventions. So we are the mainstream media too.
Yeah.
Are we not?
That's true.
But it seems that it's like old news, right? Oh, Khan's the new news. Patricia Smith, who said Hillary lied to her about her son, that's old. Like, they don't even want to touch it, or they don't want to go under the Clinton Foundation is a slush fund. All this stuff will come out, should she be elected, by special prosecutors over 8 years. You know it, right? I mean, it's just a natural.
Yeah, both of them. I think something's gonna come out if he gets elected that he's gonna be turned and impeached. She's gonna be impeached. I mean, we're stuck with the worst possible candidates. I mean, this is a travesty of the Republic that this is what we put forth. This is what we let ourselves.
Whose fault is that?
It's the people. I mean,
I don't know. You know who I think the fault is? the fault lies with the establishment itself. And what we're seeing, these are symptoms like boils on a beautiful body. And these boils suggest that there's something infected inside. And when you see both parties, one nominating a liar, I mean, not even a fibber, but an out-to-out pathological liar, and the other appointing a guy who's inexperienced, who can't really think on his feet and twist things and do what you're required to do, it's almost as if the establishment itself is collapsing.
It feels that way. It certainly does, especially, and I want to just close the loop on the Khan situation, because it's so revealing to me of the kind of character that Donald Trump is or does not have, that he would not acknowledge, that he would try to compare his sacrifices as a businessman to a family who lost a child in war. I mean, what kind of mental capacity are you coming from that you don't have enough empathy or smarts or wits about you to make that sort of a comparison? For that, he deserved to be jumped on.
Mutsa.
Well, exactly. But like you, I understand why he is the nominee. I get it.
Why is he the nominee?
Because people are so fed up with the establishment. And that's why it's so striking that the Democrats have nominated someone who could not be more insider. You could not have chosen a more insider candidate than Hillary Clinton. And the Republicans just rebelled. It's a vote based on complete rebellion. And I get where that's coming from. And I'm not going to discount any person who voted for Donald Trump, because, you know, if you think they're all ignorant fools, then, you know, you don't know much about this country and you haven't spent enough time talking to them, because they're not.
And I think we've talked about too before about how there's this parity between Trump and Bernie and the massive amounts of people who came out to vote for them. This is it. This is people trying to revolt against the establishment. But the establishment on the right was so weak that Trump walked in because he had this powerhouse, you know, ability to do that. And he had this persona that people already knew. Bernie couldn't do it because he was going up against Hillary Clinton. Like you said, John, she is the establishment. She is the power, and it was rigged for her, and she just quashed it.
And they turned it into, these emails show that we're Democrats, right? These emails that were released show that we want to attack Bernie for being an atheist Jewish guy in the South, that we make fun of black women's names, that we promise jobs like something like a Madigan Daily thing, promising jobs to donors.
That we review reporters' copy before it is published.
And Politico, still I have not seen any response to that, that the reporter offers his copy to.
Can you imagine ever doing that? I mean, like sending someone a complete piece that I certainly fact check with people, and I'll send a paragraph or I'll send a quote or something. But to send someone a complete copy of what has not yet been published and give them the chance to review it and offer any edits that they might like to suggest before it runs.
No, that means you're an agent of the party.
Sure.
And the larger story to me with the media and Trump is what you touched on, that there is a clear attempt. If I look at any website of any major newspaper, what I will see of all the newspapers and all the webs news sites, I will see negative after negative after negative after negative on Trump's antics. And they should be pointed out. And I gave him a mutza, for God's sake, okay? The Hillary stuff is not, I'm not seeing it, as you pointed out. I'm not seeing that. So what does that tell us? That the establishment media and the so-called rogue bloggers, whatever they are, the partisans, are in league together to shame American voters into voting against the establishment. They don't want them to vote against the establishment. And if you do, you're called a racist, a bigot, a sexist, a misogynist. That might work short term, but long term, it's bad for our business, and worse, it's bad for our republic. We have one mutza that came out this month we've forgotten. Justice Ginsburg comes out, the liberal old lady that she is, comes out, nice old lady, I'm sure she is, good candy, you know, on the coffee table.
Those little mints with the spoon.
The notorious RGB.
The little buttery mints.
I don't think she has the watermelon ones, the terrible ones. I think she has the good candy with the cat and the tea. But she publicly excoriated a candidate, in this case Trump, for the Supreme Court justice to do that. that tells you that the establishment is creaking and breaking. And that frightens me even more. Not that I believe in freedom and liberty. These people have lost control. On the right, they used patriotism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Send your boys to war, but then there's no jobs. On the left, they use shame, ridicule. And while they're pretending, as some colleagues who I respect and love think of themselves as progressives, when in reality what they're doing is supporting the establishment. All that's so weird.
And quashing the opinions of anyone who does not believe the way they believe. That's one of my biggest frustrations with the left, and oftentimes with the journalism community, is, you know, they consider themselves diverse of thought. That's what we're all supposed to have, diversity of thought.
No, this is the diverse thought.
But if you're
right here in the Chicago way, me, you, Jeff, a couple others of our friends, there's like four or five conservatives in the whole company.
And there's just like an intolerance too.
Right.
It's not just, you know, it's a open, I think, sort of intolerance. I'm right, you are wrong. And yet I don't espouse those views about them. I love that we have diverse opinions, and I'm not out here calling them whack jobs or whatnot, but there is certainly, you know,
I'm going to start calling them whack jobs. I'll tell you why. President Obama, our sainted president, came out and said that Donald Trump is not qualified to be president, et cetera, right? Here's the question. Was Obama qualified?
No.
Okay.
I mean,
you covered Springfield.
Right.
I tell the story about him running for coffee to get it to Jimmy DeLeo. It's a mythical story. It never happened, but it's kind of true in a way.
You've ever wondered why Disney tales all end in lies? Here's what happened after all their dreams came true.
Jimmy DeLeo's out there, and Senate President Emile Jones sees him in Springfield on a sunny day and says, "This didn't happen, I'm just making this up," and says, "Hey, boss, can I get you some coffee?" And DeLeo's like, "Yeah, sure, I'll get some. Yeah, I'd like some coffee, Emile." So he turns, and all those kids that are the backbenchers, they line up. He looks at the first one. It's Barack Obama. "Get the boss some coffee." He runs over, gets coffee, comes back, gives it to Emile. Emile gives it to Jimmy. Jimmy takes a sip. "This didn't happen, I'm making it up." He takes a sip, and he says, "I said two bleeping creams, didn't I, Emile?" Without even looking at Barack, gives the coffee back. Barack comes running back, goes, gets the coffee, comes back, gives it to Emile. Emile gives it to Jimmy. Jimmy says, "Good coffee, Emile." And that guy who ran for the coffee became president of the United States in 2 years.
It was quite an ascension. It was. And I don't want
to. So how is he qualified?
So, well, right.
It didn't happen. The coffee thing didn't happen. But I'm talking about the politics of it.
Right. No, it was John Cass storytelling, which is why we're all here.
You're like, the mind. I know, right?
I mean,
weird. Cass said that Obama went for coffee.
So
media critics, I did not say that.
Like, in the ecosystem of Springfield at that time, Barack Obama was seen as somewhat of a rising star. He passed the Gift Ban Act, which was very crucial in making sure people could no longer take money from all these lobbyists and then
use it
on their mortgage.
And that was you can't take money from Tony Resco cannot buy your house. Is that what the ban was, Barack?
I think there was a loophole. I think there was a big loophole.
No bleep, as we say.
So I don't want to say that he was like a total slacker, because in that environment, you really can be. You can coast in Springfield, not get a single bill passed, just show up at pancake breakfast in your district and get reelected over and over and over again.
And go to poker and win.
And go to poker.
Gee, I'm such a good gambler. I won again.
He passed an expansion of the income tax credit that at the time was, you know, sort of lauded. But again, you have to take all of this in the constraints of what.
Who let him do it? Who set him up so that he could do it? I'll tell you who. Emile Jones. And it was with the understanding of Mike Madigan, or those bills don't pass anywhere. That's what happened. Even though Mike was with Danny Hines for the Senate. Nothing passes without Mike Madigan or the Senate president.
Well, sure.
Okay.
But I don't want to discount that he did. That it, as far as slackers go in Springfield, and there are many, I wouldn't have put him in that category. The only thing that catapulted him was his speech at the 2004 Democratic National Convention, which was very moving. I was on the floor.
Yeah, I was there.
Emile Jones was crying. Yeah, you know, yeah. They all felt.
Is that the same Emile Jones who has never shown up at the White House or has never been, let's put it this way, never been part of the big photo ops with Obama at the White House?
I have not seen any, no.
No, I didn't either.
No, now he's over at the Illinois Sports Facility Authority.
Yeah, I like Emile. Emile Jones is a professional politician, and I've always respected him for that, and I think he's very shrewd in what he does.
Very shrewd. He pointed his own son to his seat once he left.
Kind of like
loves to play racial politics.
Yeah.
Loves it.
All that stuff.
Expert at it.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
The Kennedys beget the Kennedys, the Hineses beget the Hineses.
Well, but then.
Remember that one?
You had Barack from that speech. Then he decided to run for U.S. Senate. I believe I was the first reporter, because I was at the Daily Southtown at the time, to write a story that Barack was running. Nobody else even wrote about it because he was considered to be so. This was too far fetched. No one in Southern Illinois is going to vote for somebody named Barack Obama.
Barack Hussein Obama.
Well, right. I remember him calling me. Barack Obama called me at one point because we covered the South suburbs and all the Southwest area. And I did a pretty big feature story on Dan Hines. And Barack Obama was angry. And he's like, why are you giving him all this play? I'm from the South Side, too. And he tried to kind of leverage getting some of his own coverage. So, nobody really took him seriously initially. He had a tiny campaign staff. They drove around in like this beat up old station wagon. Dan Shulman among them. Pam Adams, I believe, was his initial spokesperson.
You know why I didn't take him seriously?
Why?
During that time when he was campaigning, they put him in charge of the. You remember he was going to do the whole revitalize ethics in Illinois?
Mm-hmm.
He calls me up and he goes, Brother Cass. I'm like, hey, man. And he says, I'm putting this ethics bill together. And I want to know what should be in it. What do you think should be in it? And I just sat there and I didn't say anything for 30 seconds. Because by that time, it wasn't my first rodeo. And I don't like being petted. Mm-hmm. I can't use the real word. But it involves petting. You know? And finally I said, okay, you know what I want, Barack? You put something in the bill that says all subcontractors of all state-sponsored construction projects list the cost of their materials, the price they charge the state or their major contractor, their prime contractor, and their personnel. And you put that in where they get the concrete, how much they charge for it, where they get the asphalt, how much they charge, how much do I pay a pound or a ton, how much do I sell it? He goes, really, that's good. That's very interesting. You think it ever made the bill?
That's why we still have potholes everywhere in the state.
No, because road builders, one of the most influential groups in
how you
Springfield.
Doing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guess what? He wouldn't have been president. He wouldn't have been state senator. So all this stuff that he says Trump's not qualified, actually Trump's more qualified than Barack Obama to be president because he's an executive and Barack never was an executive.
True. You could easily make that case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeff, this has been the Kristen and John show. And you're sitting there.
You guys are in the way back machine, and it's before my realm of influence.
All right, let's get to the way front machine here. Jeff goes to Philadelphia. I leave him in Cleveland. By the way, I had such a great radio time. I had drinks with you and Ro.
That was awesome.
We got blasted one night, and I had drinks with Kristen and our friend Dan Proft very nice steakhouse.
Yes.
Oh, the steak was wonderful.
Was it delicious?
I haven't turned in my expense report yet. But.
I just did.
Okay.
So I really
good
just,
media friend.
Yeah,
week.
It was.
I'm sad I wasn't. I missed that.
It was. I visited that place a couple more
times.
What was
it called?
Red.
Red, yeah.
It's called Red. And if there was there was nothing in the convention hall except, I'm telling you, like hot dogs and pretzels and
crap hot dogs.
No alcohol.
Wait a second. One day I go,
boo.
We're stuck. Kristen and I are stuck somewhere, and we finally get back to the media complex where we're working, which is 10 miles away or whatever, a mile, 2 miles away.
Yeah.
And she goes, I got to get something to eat. I said, I stay out for a little fresh air. And I said, text me if there's something. And she texted me something like, oh, just a little, not really much. So I go downstairs to our Tribune work area where they have like little warming chafing dishes of stuff. Nothing in them. Kristen's eating a salad. And they say, there's a place right down in our complex you could get a hot, you know, get good food.
Yeah.
I go to this place.
It was awful.
There was one hot dog on the roller. You know what I mean? Like the one hot dog, like you're at 7-Eleven or White Hen, whatever. Sure. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. You're blasted. And you see that one tamale going around and around. It was like that.
Yeah, it was bad news.
The food in Philly was way better.
Was
it? Did you go to Tony Luke's?
Way better. No, we had no time. We had to do radio in the morning, radio in the midday, radio at night. It was just overwhelming.
You guys really, because you were producing Row, and then for the show, and then the RoCon show on WGN.
Yeah.
Ding. Ding. And then also his network stuff. Right?
Yeah, so we would do a morning hit every day with Cochran's show on WGN, you know, just touch base, whatever. And I had to make sure Ro was up for that and awake and alert, so that was part of my job. But then we would get to the Wells Fargo Center at like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We were live at 4 Eastern and do a couple pre-tape some things, and we were live for 4 hours. And then we would go right upstairs to the press box and then cover for ABC's radio network coverage until that ended.
So yeah. You were in the radio on Radio Row doing that, or were you in the press box of the convention center doing it?
For the evening coverage, for the mm-hmm. evening program, we were in the press box. During the day, we were in Radio Row, which was right on the main floor.
For those of you who don't know what Radio Row is, it's basically, think of an airport with a corridor. It's that long,
yeah.
Okay? And every 3 feet, there's another radio station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they all sit in these little booths, and they're talking.
Yeah, and what you guys saw in Cleveland was the Ritz-Carlton compared to what we had.
Really?
Oh, my God. So in Cleveland, for what it was beautiful. It was this parking garage. Trust me, it was beautiful by comparison. It was this converted parking garage where they put up drywall, they put up partitions. You had a little cubby, a little kind of a room, if you will, within a larger room. Air conditioned, it was nice, really nice, palatial even.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Philly, we were on the main concourse, immediately adjacent to the main entrance where all the delegates came streaming through, at just folding tables, just lined up.
That's got to be loud, too.
It was loud. It was hot because mm-hmm. it was 100 and some degrees with 100% humidity, and the doors were just open the whole time. And we had to worry about it raining.
We're dripping.
We're condensating. Conditioning vents, which were way up in the ceiling.
We're dripping.
We're condensating. So we're trying to move materials and make sure we're not getting electrocuted.
I learned a lot about the broadcast producers. I learned something at the Cleveland convention.
About Jeff? A little
about,
secret?
Well, he mentioned how he had to make sure Roe was up and ready and all of that.
Right.
Because I was hanging out at the bar one night with a couple of television anchors. I won't mention them, but we were out late, and their producer, who is, you know, probably half my age, was just sitting there nervous, watching them, you know, trying to get them to go to bed.
Like a babysitter. Yeah.
And they were just like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll be fine. And sure enough, they were both.
You did Marianne Ahern so well. That was Marianne Ahern. Say that again. I love her.
I'm not going to mention
Marianne?
Who it was.
But the way you said it, it was like so Marianne Ahern.
It was someone
confirmed
who. Anyway. I just learned,
Marianne. I know it wasn't you.
When you're kind of a broadcast star, you get to have this assistant or this person who kind of keeps you on track. I got to drag my own butt out of bed.
Right.
But it was quite entertaining to watch this person very, very concerned that there was too much alcohol consumption and they were going to be, you know, on the air in the morning.
What amazed me about the radio people was that Rose broadcasting in a booth about 4 feet long, okay? And he's a tall guy, right? Not gigantic, but not a shrimp. And he's there. And Jeff has all these little computers stacked up, and he's producing with plugging cords in and out, touching things and moving things. And while he's doing that, Jeff is also simultaneously looking in the corridor right in front of them where people are passing to grab guests.
Yeah.
And these guests, if you, like, I won't name names, but say some moderate Republican congressman from Illinois would be wandering by. Not that I saw him there.
Right.
But, I mean, these people, you know, people mm-hmm. like Jan Schakowsky of the Democrats.
Sure.
And they would wander by and, oh, do you want me on your show? And people are grabbing these guys. right?
And that and that's
did a, you feel good about it?
I did. It was fun, but that was the biggest difference between DNC and RNC. At RNC, they wanted to get on everybody. You name it. I mean, they were trying to get you everybody under the sun. You know, come out. You want this delegate? Do you want so and so's brother? Them? You know, whoever. Big stars. At the DNC, we would have people come over, officials from the DNC, like just media liaisons, would walk over and say, hey, we've got the undersecretary of you know, union arts or whatever, some BS title and some BS agenda. Yeah, they're on with you guys at 5:30. I said, what? I said, who says who? Said, oh, no, we've got it on the schedule. I said, well, I booked the show. I'm the EP, so I don't know who you're dealing with. No.
EP means executive producer.
Right. This is set up. You have to talk to them at that time.
Whoa.
I said, we don't. I said, I don't know who you're talking to, but we're not talking to them. We don't care who they
are. Yeah, stand your ground.
Extrapolate,
Jeff Garlin.
Extrapolate, children. Extrapolate. That's the attitude of the Democratic Party just in dealing with the media now. Wait till she's elected, if she is.
She hasn't had a press conference in, what, a year?
200 some days.
This lack of access and the control and the messaging is just going to be exhausting.
Yes. Well, it's not over yet, and it's not that I'm, to tell you the truth, I'm not like a big Trump fan. He's not a conservative, and I'm conservative. But what I want is a little shaken up of the game.
Right.
I'm tired of Illinois. I see Illinois as a one-party state. Bruce Rauner shook it up a little bit. He's getting beaten down with all this nonsense, mm-hmm. right? I want it shaken up because I believe in this weird thing called liberty. I believe in liberty more than I believe in being shamed.
Right. It's a tough position to be in sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yep. We should place bets at some point. You know, I'll get a little bet game going.
I'll get a bet game going. Yes, last week, relaxed. I filed from home a couple days, which was nice.
Yeah.
I don't usually do that, and I should. I worked on my garden, took up, you know, I forgot to bring some tomatoes for you.
Oh, man.
They look delicious.
But I'm thinking of doing a column on, because I put up those tomato columns on the pictures on both Facebook pages. Within like 2 hours, there were like 500 likes.
I know.
And I think that.
Pictures of food on Facebook and social media.
Hey,
always a home
without
run.
Zeus there. So I thought, I asked the paper to come up with some interactive thing where people could.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Post their tomatoes, because, mm-hmm. you know, everyone loves their own tomatoes. But another thing happened because, and it had nothing to do with tomatoes. It had to do with Bill Clinton sitting with Tony Preckwinkle.
Oh, my God.
In his box while Rahm Emanuel is about to be savaged by Hillary's Democratic Party.
How about that?
I have a story for that. So
So I write the column on it early, put it out. Everyone's chasing it that day, even though I just saw it on TV. Then what? You tell me.
Yes. I'll tell you. So we were there. So obviously we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And before we landed, I was emailing with as many of Rahm's media communications minions I could, which she has an entire army of them.
About 49,
right.
actually.
Exactly. And so I've got them all on different emails and then on one collective email being like, hey, we're on the ground. We're right by the entrance. He's going to have to walk past us. Just, you know, let's get 5 minutes with him just to say he's here. It'll be great. Okay, yeah, sure, you know, getting email replies. Yeah, we'll make some time.
We'll work it out.
Yeah. And the only reason I knew he was going to be there only on Wednesday is because we were sitting in the airport, Ro and I, on Sunday morning, and Mike Madigan is on our plane. And I see him, he's sitting across from me. I texted you the picture, and he's sitting across from me powwowing with his assistant, and I'm just, you know, reading my book, quote unquote, right. And I'm just watching him. He's like, I can lip read him say, oh, the mayor will be there Wednesday. So, all right, perfect. Yeah. I know he's going to be there. I know he's going to be on the
reporting.
Ground.
Right. So sneaky.
So I'm like,
lip reader.
Right. So I know he's going to be there Wednesday. I heard a rumor. And yeah. He, we know we're going to be there. Let's do this. They're like, sure. We'll make some time. You know, he'll get in.
Right.
This is it. Yada, yada, yada. The morning after Tony's in the box, radio silence. Can't get a return from
anybody.
That's
when anybody. I put that column up early about 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't get a response. Finally, I get one ringer come back to me. Oh, let me check. A minute and a half later, he's not going to be able to do it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And then he proceeds to, so he's got a little thin skin. Then the Democratic National Committee puts out their video, which basically says, Obama had a choice. Either listen to the coward Emanuel or go for principle and good, you know.
Right.
The best of the best that man can offer in the healthcare bill that now increases my premiums by 45% or whatever it is.
I mean, that was a bust throwing. It really was. And as much as they've tried
to... Air Force One. They threw him under Air Force One.
There you go.
What does that tell you about the... Because I don't... I understood the spin, and I, you know, you write a column. Look, it's not that I'm a sage. I just saw it on TV, and I just happened to see it. So I write it, and then the obligation of other reporters is to knock it, right? Oh, that's not really, that's no big deal for Hillary.
Oh,
for
it was a very big deal.
You know how the game is played, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, there's no such thing as a coincidence. That box is worth a lot of money. Those the people who sit with the president's, If they're paying them $750,000 for a speech in Tajikistan, guarantee that costs money to sit next to him.
Sure.
Right?
And to your point, John.
No accident.
To your point. Yeah. In sitting in there, during the program, whenever they would dim the lights or like show it something or something would happen on stage, there was always a spotlight on those boxes. You could always see who was in those boxes. The rest of the boxes, we're talking other quote unquote important people. Dark. No spotlight on them, but those VIP boxes where it was, you know, the Clintons and it was Tony and it was everybody of importance always had a light on them no matter what was going on stage.
Bill Clinton gets along with Reb, always has. Bill Clinton and Hillary don't get along. I don't think so. I had one time thought if she gets elected, this is years ago, if she gets elected, she might want, because of Reb's connections, Hollywood, fundraising, Chicago, she might want to seek him for a vice president.
Sure, a lot of people talked about that. Mm-hmm.
Now, what's Rahm's future, Kristen?
You know what? It's not looking good. I do think he can still rehabilitate his image before the next mayoral election in 2019. But that convention, to me, showed how toxic he is, even to his own friends. Forget, like, political allies. These are people... I mean, David Axelrod was doing the voiceover, not at the moment when they threw Rahm under the bus for the healthcare bill. You know, he was part of that video, David mm-hmm. Axelrod. So who helped reelect him mm-hmm. this last time around?
Who helped savage Anita Alvarez?
True.
Over Laquan McDonald.
Well,
David Axelrod.
I think the Laquan McDonald case has just been so damaging to him. And when you had a convention where that was a theme, you know, you had the mothers, I'm going to forget their name, but the mothers who are united because they've lost children to right. gun violence with police. When you have them on stage, you got to keep Rahm Emanuel as far away from, you know, the focus as possible.
Things to watch. There are already meetings going on. What are we going to do about the city in the post-Rahm era? These are insider meetings, political, business leaders, others. They're already talking about
They're prepping for it, you're saying.
They're trying to figure out what is the mm-hmm. future going to be. You know, because they see it, and they're heavily invested in the city. I'm not saying all the oligarchs, but generally some. And they're thinking, what are we going to do? Let's watch that. Let's watch the Preckwinkle parade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she wants to be mayor. I don't know who would want to, given the state of the finances.
Right. But she said as much. She keeps saying it. So
well,
I guess
we had
we're
Tom
just
Dart
have to believe
the other, you know, Tom Dart's mm-hmm. thinking about it. But
yeah.
I don't know. Would you want to be mayor, Kristen?
You know,
there's no money.
There's no money, and it's not as much fun as the late 90s when everyone was fighting over pork. Remember that? It was like, are we going to have this big piece of pork in my district or stained glass windows in this parking garage in Naperville? It is a different environment. But I would want to be mayor to just do all the painful things that are necessary, but to just do them. And I'm so frustrated that, you know, maybe this... If Rahm is seeing the writing on the wall and he doesn't see himself as being eligible really for a third term, maybe he will take some more dramatic action over these last 2 years.
His future is with the hedge fund boys, if he has one now with them still, after not doing enough, like they put him in there so that he would make cuts and he didn't. 50 schools? No. It should have been 150 schools. Things like that that he didn't have the guts to do. So we'll see if he goes back to them.
Right.
If he thinks about going in the business world, he's got to make cuts. Otherwise, what's his currency? The other thing that happened this week, and I know Jeff wants to wrap up, but I got to tell you. I was at the Chicago Fire game, which I always go to.
Mm-hmm.
And Nelson Rodriguez came out. It was Pride Night. And the beautiful rendition of the national anthem by the Gay Men's Chorus. And then Nelson Rodriguez, the general manager of the Fire, comes out to the center of the stadium with a microphone alone and tells the fans that if they offer a certain chant, which means in Spanish, man whore.
What?
They will be kicked out of the game.
Oh, my goodness.
Throughout soccer, it's a beautiful game, but there's an ugly little story. Mexican fans have created this chant. It's spelled P-U-T-O. It means basically...
It's slang for the word bitch, but when you use it in a male version, it means you're...
It's a slam against gay men.
Yeah, okay. Feminine man.
Okay.
It's a slam against effeminate men, and it diminishes people. And so Nelson Rodriguez, and it's standard throughout soccer, Latins, but particularly Mexicans, thousands would scream it in American stadiums.
At particular players.
At the goalie, when the opposing goalie kicks the ball forward, they scream this. So Nelson Rodriguez stood up and said, if you say this, I will have you kicked out. You will lose your privileges. We won't tolerate it anymore. Done. And I thought, here's a guy going against the economic interests of his ball club, right? Because there are many Mexican soccer fans. And he said, that doesn't belong here anymore. And I thought that was courageous, principled, and good. Just wanted to leave you with that.
End the high note, John.
End it with a high note. One thing we didn't find out about was Jeff with your pies. Quickly, Jeff, did you find a pie in the land of savory pies, Philadelphia?
Unfortunately, my schedule did not allow too much babysitting, as Christian.
Yeah, see?
So you know how he babysits? Because I've been on his babysitting trips.
Who?
Jeff.
Yeah. Okay. Who do you babysit?
Okay, Ro and I are at the bar. Jeff's at the bar, too.
Oh,
you're not
doing
much babysitting, my friend.
No?
I don't know how we got out of that place.
So he was not playing the role that night.
Let's put it this way. He's not that kind of producer. Okay. He's a good one, though. For another edition of Chicago Way, thanks to Kristen McQuarrie from the editorial board, Jeff Carlin, Ace EP for the Rocon show on WGN, and me, John Cass, remember this. Grow your tomatoes, slice them in quarters, olive oil, salt, oregano, pepper, maybe an anchovy.